This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Tariffs for Europe. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay, who's in for Jennifer Koschenka, on this Thursday, May 31st. Thanks for joining us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
The Trump administration could announce as early as today that it's hitting the European Union with duties on steel and aluminum imports.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has begun 2 days of talks with a high-ranking North Korean official about keeping alive next month's summit.
New recommendations from the American Cancer Society about screenings for colon cancer.
And how the lack of housing in rural America is hurting the job market in those communities.
The housing in rural areas is actually more expensive than in some urban areas. And so there's a real shortage of housing, and there's a whole bunch of reasons for that, but it's becoming very hard for these places to address a worker shortage.
Wall Street Journal reporter Shandy Race on the connection between the housing market and the job market in rural America. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is expected to meet for a second straight day today with a senior North Korean official as the Trump administration tries to establish whether there's enough common ground to proceed with a summit in Singapore next month. The discussions began with a dinner last night that Mr. Pompeo hosted for General Kim Jong-chol in New York, who is often described as the right-hand man to North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. His arrival in the U.S. yesterday was his first, also making him the highest-ranking North Korean leader to visit the U.S. in 18 years. White House spokeswoman Sarah Sanders.
The conversation is going to be focused on denuclearization of the peninsula. That's what these ongoing conversations taking place now will be centered on, as well as this summit that would take place in Singapore.
Mr. Pompeo and General Kim are planning to meet for more in-depth talks today. The summit is scheduled for 12 days from now, and significant differences remain over the terms on which Pyongyang might give up its nuclear arsenal in exchange for security assurances and relief from crippling economic sanctions. A grand jury in Manhattan has indicted former Hollywood producer Harvey Weinstein on charges of rape. The indictment comes after Mr. Weinstein's arrest last Friday for alleged sex crimes in 2004 and 2013 against two women. Mr. Weinstein's lawyer, Benjamin Brofman, said Mr. Weinstein would not testify before the grand jury because a request to postpone his testimony was denied. The charges of rape in the first and third degree involve a woman who alleged Mr. Weinstein forced her to have sex in a hotel. Another allegation from 2004 was made by then-aspiring actress Lucia Evans, who has accused Mr. Weinstein of forcing her to perform a sex act. Mr. Brofman criticized the allegations, saying Mr. Weinstein was in a decades-long relationship with the woman who made the 2013 rape allegation, and the relationship continued for years afterwards. Well, the Trump administration is expected to make an announcement, possibly today, that it's moving to impose tariffs on European steel and aluminum. We get more from this morning's Mike Gavin.
Unable to win concessions from the European Union ahead of tomorrow's deadline, the Commerce Department is expected to follow through on its previous threat to hit the EU with tariffs. The Wall Street Journal says Europe could retaliate with its own tariffs on American products like motorcycles, jeans, and bourbon. President Trump announced global tariffs in March based on national security concerns, but gave Europe a temporary exemption. Gordon.
Thank you, Mike. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, by the way, who led the investigation into metal imports as a possible threat to national security, emphasized yesterday that the U.S. wants to keep negotiating a possible deal that opens markets in Europe to U.S. exports. It's 10 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for joining us. Final day of May. Welcome aboard. President Trump is again lamenting his choice for attorney general. He wrote on Twitter yesterday that he wished he'd chosen someone other than Jeff Sessions, who enraged the president when he recused himself from the Russia investigation. What does this latest social media post mean for the relationship? We're joined now by Kevin Johnson, Justice Department reporter at USA Today. Kevin, set this up.
It's not a surprise, really. I mean, this is yet another instance in which President Trump has expressed his frustration with the Attorney General. He's done this dating back to July, when he was for days actively trolling the Attorney General on Twitter, calling him weak. He, in an interview with the New York Times, he first indicated back in July that he wouldn't have appointed or nominated Jeff Sessions as Attorney General had he known he would recuse himself from the Russia investigation. So this is just him continuing to vent his frustration with the Attorney General's decision to recuse himself in the Russia investigation.
And he feels what, it would just be bad optics to flat out fire him at this point?
Well, who knows? you know, whether that decision is coming. His attorney, Rudy Giuliani, has indicated that no such decision has been coming or is coming. He's said that a few days ago. Whether that's changed is unclear. However, it seems to be yet more evidence of the president's preoccupation with the Russia inquiry.
Would the president, I guess, quietly cheer, I guess, if Mr. Sessions were to resign, I guess, from all the trolling?
Well, I would guess he wouldn't be unhappy about it, but members of Congress have indicated that it would be difficult for the president to get any new nominee confirmed. The Senate would have to confirm any new nominee for that job. So it would be a harder proposition than perhaps the president is proposing via Twitter. It also underscores, too, probably the most fraught relationship, you know, in the cabinet between president and cabinet official. On the one hand, the president obviously has made no secret about his frustration. But on the other, the attorney general is widely credited with perhaps being the most aggressive in carrying out the president's agenda. And from, you know, on points from civil rights to immigration, he has no stronger advocate in the cabinet than Jeff Sessions.
Hmm.
So it is an unusual relationship, to say the least.
Yeah. We're speaking with Kevin Johnson, Justice Department reporter at USA Today. We're talking about what's next after President Trump expresses regret for Jeff Sessions, the Attorney General. Well, I guess, like anything, this could be just a relationship where folks don't see eye to eye but still move forward on things? Or is this relationship destroyed? How do you characterize it?
Well, I mean, the relationship, I don't know how to characterize it other than it doesn't appear to be viable, you know, in the long term. But what that means in terms of timing is unknown. It's interesting because the Attorney General enjoys broad support out in among much of the Republican Party for what he's done while he's been Attorney General. You know, he has been active on important parts of the president's agenda, from the law and order calls for locking up MS-13 to enforcing or trying to enforce a travel ban.
Thanks, Kevin. Kevin Johnson, Justice Department reporter at USA Today. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Rasa Kay is here with more of America's First News.
Well, Gordon, Kim Jong-un's right-hand man met Secretary of State Mike Pompeo for dinner last night in New York, and will keep talking today in the scramble to organize next month's historic nuclear summit between North Korean and U.S. leaders. Texas Governor Greg Abbott's making 40 recommendations to improve school safety following the shooting at Santa Fe High School in South Texas this month that left 10 dead. The proposals include increasing penalties for violating gun storage laws, better screening of students for mental health problems, and more armed officers.
There will automatically be more law enforcement on campus such that if an active shooter situation arises, there will be additional personnel there to immediately respond to that tragedy.
Parkland, Florida parents have created a political action committee directed against politicians who are funded by the National Rifle Association. The group wants to oust political candidates who both oppose its efforts to amend the laws that permit semi-automatic rifles and or who receive campaign donations from the NRA. Police are offering a $12,000 reward to find the killer of a Tennessee sheriff's deputy fatally shot during a traffic stop Wednesday. Sergeant Daniel Baker responded to a report of a suspicious car and was found dead in his own vehicle shortly time later. Tennessee Bureau of Investigation Acting Director Jason Locke says suspect Stephen Wiggins' girlfriend is in custody.
We've been working closely with local, state, and federal agencies from across the region and state in pursuit of Wiggins, who is believed to be armed and very dangerous.
Wildwood, New Jersey police released body cam footage to help explain why a cop punched a woman in the head during a Memorial Day weekend beach incident that was all caught on video that went viral. The new videos show a steady escalation of the encounter that shows her cursing and insulting cops and one officer losing his patience when she walks away from him, telling her, "You're about to get dropped." The investigation continues with the officers on desk duty. Movie producer Harvey Weinstein's been indicted in New York City on charges of rape and criminal sexual act. He's been accused of sexual misconduct by more than 70 women, with some allegations decades old, but he denies the sex was consensual. And here's a diet tip. Columbia University neuroscientists believe they've discovered how to manipulate the brain to make sweet things taste bad and bitter food taste better. They can switch parts of the brain's amygdala on and off. So far, however, it only works on mice.
Oh, okay. We'll continue to wait for that then.
A while, but it's promising.
It is. Thanks, Rasa. 22 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Glad you're with us. If you find it uncomfortable to function at work when the air conditioning goes down, imagine trying to do well on a standardized test in school without AC. For many of us, this time of year means weekends at the beach, evenings at the pool. But for America's students, many of whom are still in school and some without air conditioning, the start of summer can be a challenging time for paying attention in class. A working paper distributed this week by the National Bureau of Economic Research aims to quantify exactly how hard it is for students to learn when it's hot. More from Market Watch reporter Jillian Berman. Jillian, explain.
Yeah, so a group of researchers took a look at how heat affects learning, and basically what they found is that students who were in environments where in the year leading up to taking a standardized test, the temperature was hotter, they tended to do worse. But one thing that mitigated that problem was air conditioning.
Hmm. I can see where that would, I know it would affect my concentration. How kind of a wide of a range of a study was this?
Yeah, so the study looked at 10 million PSAT scores. So the PSAT is a standardized test that students can take either in 10th or 11th grade, and some students take it in both. And so the researchers focused on those students who took it twice and compared their own test scores to one another. So, you know, it was basically looking at the same student twice to see how temperature affected the test score in a given year.
Wow. So what were some of the results?
So in schools without air conditioning, for every 1 degree Fahrenheit increase in the temperature, that correlated to about a 1% decrease in learning. So basically in classrooms that were hotter for the year leading up to the test, students tended to do worse.
I'm just guessing that air-conditioned schools are more found in suburban areas, perhaps not urban and rural?
Yeah, so a couple interesting things about the prevalence of air conditioning were that, you know, in areas that are typically hot, air conditioning is much more widely spread among students. So while you might expect to see that heat would affect students in, say, the South more when it comes to their test scores, that actually wasn't the case because they were more likely to have air conditioning. But what we saw is in the Northeast, air conditioning tended to be more prevalent in wealthier communities.
Hmm. We're speaking with Jillian Berman, personal finance reporter at MarketWatch, and she's written a piece entitled "One Way to Improve Test Scores, Proper Air Conditioning." Obviously, that's no easy fix, right? If a school without it decided they suddenly want it, boy, good luck, getting some massive fix implemented.
Yeah, so obviously to install air conditioning in a school district can be pretty expensive, and it's a big upfront cost. The researchers, though, did sort of a back-of-the-envelope calculation, and they figured out that, the long term, it would actually be a net benefit financially because students would do better and then theoretically have more economic success. But, you know, it's hard to convince people to wait for that kind of long term benefit.
Yeah.
You know, one thing that inspired the researchers to take a look at this is actually that, you know, there's a correlation between places across the country and internationally where that are hotter, and they tend to do lower on measures of academic performance.
Thanks, Jillian. MarketWatch reporter Jillian Berman. It is 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. If you were fumbling around in the dark and someone handed you a flashlight, you'd take it, right? Nobody wants to be left in the dark. But shouldn't it be the same when it comes to spotting threats to your identity and the data on your devices? The digital world is so full of connections, it may only take one weak link for criminals to get in. Fortunately, new LifeLock Identity Theft Protection now adds the power of Norton Security to shed light on more of today's threats. Threats to your identity, like your personal info for sale on the dark web, and threats to your computer or tablet, like ransomware. Of course, no one can prevent all identity theft or cybercrime, but new LifeLock with Norton detects a wide range of threats to your identity and devices that you may not see on your own. Join now, and for the first year, get an additional 10% off the low starting price of $7.99 a month, plus applicable taxes. Go to LifeLock.com today and enter the promo code Gordon. That's LifeLock.com and the promo code Gordon.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Thursday, May 31st. Gordon Deal with Rasa Kay, who's filling in for Jennifer Koshenka this week. Some of our top stories and headlines: tariffs on European steel imports could be announced today. Talks continue between U.S. and North Korean officials about the potential summit. Game one of the NBA Finals tonight. Finals of the Scripps National Spelling Bee today. Talk about perks. Walmart employees can now pursue degrees in business or supply chain management at three nonprofit schools for $1 a day. New guidelines for colon cancer screenings, and the bride who paid a debt on her wedding day. That story in about 20 minutes. It's time for a business update, and it's brought to you by the Michigan Economic Development Corporation. If you want to take your business to the top, take it to a top 10 most improved state for business, Michigan. Contact MichiganBusiness.org today. Fewer homes are being built per household than at almost any time in U.S. history, and it's even worse in rural communities. Rural areas are also seeing their population stagnate or decline as younger people opt for urban living, adding to the gamble involved in speculative building. That's having a direct impact on employment, since some workers can't afford to take a job offering because they can't afford a home. More from Shandy Race, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Shandy, what's going on here?
So in rural parts of the country, the unemployment rate is very low, just like the national unemployment rate. In some parts, it's even lower. For this story, I visited rural Nebraska, where the unemployment rate is 2.7%, compared to the national unemployment rate of 3.9%. So there's lots of jobs. Pretty much anyone who wants a job can get a job. The problem is that, you know, you wouldn't necessarily expect this, but the housing in rural areas is actually more expensive than in some urban areas. And so there's a real shortage of housing, and there's a whole bunch of reasons for that. But it's becoming very hard for these places to address a worker shortage if they don't have places to house new workers.
Wow. Is the rural pricing that's ahead of the city because of the scarcity of homes?
Yes, that's part of it. The big reason is that developers simply do not want to go and build in rural communities. And the reason for that is that you're not going to be building as much, so you can't tap into economies of scale. A rural community may need 30 new homes or 10 new homes, as opposed to, you know, hundreds of new homes that you would get in a city. And so it's a lot cheaper for developers to build in cities. It's a lot riskier for them to develop in rural areas. And so what you're left with in many rural communities is very old, decrepit housing stock, very limited options for market rate rental units. And instead, you know, people are just paying very high prices for really bad housing options. So, you know, people just don't want to live there.
Wow. So the,
or they can't afford to live there.
So you found that there were nearly like 1,000 job openings in, what, Platte County, Nebraska, and they don't, a lot of them don't pay enough to, say, cover the rent or to purchase a home?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the issue is that there are options for people who would fall into, like, the category of low-income housing. So people who are, you know, truly poor, they could potentially find places to live. And the people who have lots of money could also, you know, just pay a lot for a home. But it's those people who are sort of middle class, working class people who are making, you know, a decent salary, but not enough to afford the expensive $300,000 home. So that's really the group of people that are kind of struggling the most, and that's also the group of people that companies need the most to fill their factories, to fill the farms, places like that. So, you know, just the number that you quote in Platte County, Nebraska, which is a rural area of Nebraska, there are something like 1,000 job openings. There are only 65 homes on the market.
Oh, my goodness.
So how do you possibly meet the kind of demand for the jobs if you just don't have a place for people to live?
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Shandy Race. She's written a piece entitled "The Scarcity of Housing in Rural America Drives the Worker Shortage." Explain the guy you profiled in the story, this Austin Steinbeck. Explain his situation.
So this guy was recruited by the Chamber of Commerce in Columbus, Nebraska. He lives in Iowa, in Crescent, Iowa, and they actually went to Iowa. They held a job fair. They're trying to recruit people because the companies need workers. And he said, great, I'll apply. And he got 12 responses. He had tons of interviews. He got a great job offer, a $500 signing bonus, $17 an hour, full benefits. He went for a week to Columbus, Nebraska to look for a house, and he could not find anything that he could afford, and so he had to turn down the job offer. So now he's staying in Crescent, Iowa, where he's making less money, he's got no benefits, and, you know, that just sort of highlights the challenge that places like Columbus, Nebraska are facing. They have the candidates, they just have to have the housing that these people can afford in order to move, and so they can't address their worker shortage if they can't get these people to move there. And, you know, the bigger fear that places like Columbus have is that the employers that they currently have in town are going to just up and leave to places where there isn't such a severe worker shortage.
Boy, Shandy, Wall Street Journal reporter Shandy Race, 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. It has been a dogfight, but we have arrived at Friday Eve.
And what does that give us exactly? What have we accomplished arriving at Friday Eve?
Well, I think it gives us hope. We can see the light for the weekend.
Yeah, sure we can.
You know, well, listen, to revisit this thing, this whole Friday Eve, I mean, Thursday is like the big push because Friday you operate on adrenaline.
Right. I know you keep saying that.
So you've got to get through Thursday. So when Thursday is here, just as long as you get to the other side, you know that adrenaline will carry you downhill tomorrow and into the weekend.
Perhaps later in the day. It's still very early on this Friday Eve you speak of.
You don't buy in anyway, so. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, the epidemic of hacked road signs across the country is showing no signs of slowing down. The latest example comes from North Carolina, where signs along highways serving as the route of an upcoming Ironman race were hacked to warn of delays stemming from idiots on bikes. A man told local TV he was riding on old U.S. Route 1 near Moncure last weekend when he spotted the electronic sign warning drivers to expect delays June 3rd because of blanks on bikes. You can guess what the blanks might have been. Elsewhere, a woman posted a video to Facebook showing a sign along U.S. Route 64 near Jordan Lake that showed a similar warning about idiots on bikes. As with other recent road sign hacking incidents, the state's Department of Transportation is not taking any responsibility, saying it does not own the signs. The signs, which likely belonged to Ironman, were back to showing the normal warning messages sans commentary on Tuesday. See, I can't help but think, Gordon, we might be partially responsible for this, because whenever I see one of these stories, they're kind of funny stories,
and
we like to have a good chuckle about it, but now we're just sort of fanning the flames, perhaps inciting more of these incidents to happen.
It's possible. Yeah. Right, we're not committing the act, though, let's be clear.
Yes,
we're not responsible here.
Oh, sure, but I'm sure we're not helping either.
It is. They are funny. As long as they're clean.
Yes.
Like, they can be funny.
Right. And we haven't had any big accidents or anything like that.
Right.
There's not one that says, turn right for a pot of gold or something.
No, these
big accident. You know.
These probably say, you know, be aware this weekend, you know, road closures due to the Iron
competition
or whatever.
Right. So far, so good.
It's pretty funny.
It's going to come back to bite us at some point.
But again, it's worth reminding even the folks at Ironman, password 1234 should not be your password.
That is a good public service announcement.
Carry on.
And speaking of fanning the flames, Gordon, there was a fire at Citi Field yesterday, but for once it had nothing to do with the Mets. While New York was in Atlanta trying to turn around a season spiraling out of control, cameras caught a pretty significant-looking fire that broke out at the team's home park in a trophy case near an entryway. Thankfully, the sprinkler system kicked in, there was minimal damage, and no one was hurt. That didn't stop social media users from predictably using the news of the fire to pile on the Mets, with many saying the flames reminded them of the Mets' bullpen of late, and joking that the Mets' relievers were called in to put out the fire but just made the situation worse by pouring gasoline on it. Others joked that now Citi Field was going to join the other 11 Mets currently on the disabled list.
Very clever.
Oh, boy.
By the way, and just when you're thinking, oh, good, you know, a story without politics.
Yes.
Do you happen to read the Twitter thread on this?
No.
The guy who took the video
and
posted it was then asked for permission to use it by various TV outlets.
Yes.
Well, he said yes to ABC, NBC, CBS, but no to Fox. And that started like the most hateful thread and commentary. It was unbelievable.
Oh, boy.
Just, I mean, from a guy who just took civilian video of a fire and posted it, like,
there's no such thing as no politics.
Oh,
politics is in everything now.
It's exhausting. Thank you, Mike. 12 minutes in front of the hour. You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and advanced manufacturing. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org. Thanks for being with us. On the health front, significant announcement from the American Cancer Society, which says we should start getting screened for colon cancer at age 45 instead of at 50. The group lowered its guidelines yesterday after research clearly showed we're getting colorectal cancer at ever younger ages in the U.S., although it's not clear why. How about this stat? Dr. Richard Wender, Chief Cancer Control Officer for the American Cancer Society, says people born in the 80s and 90s are at double the risk for developing cancer of the colon and four times the risk for developing cancer of the rectum compared to people born in the 40s and 50s. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, Rasa Kay is back with more of America's First News.
Well, Gordon, the most senior North Korean official to visit the U.S. in 18 years had dinner in New York last night with the Secretary of State. Vice Chairman Kim Yong-chol and Mike Pompeo continue their discussions today to finalize planning for a June 12th summit designed to end a nuclear standoff. Texas Governor Greg Abbott is proposing 40 ideas to make schools safer after the shooting at Santa Fe High School in South Texas this month that left 10 dead. The proposals include strengthening gun storage laws and expanding a program to arm educators.
As one Santa Fe student said at one of the roundtables, she said, and I quote, "Arming teachers and not knowing who is armed, that is what we need." Her sentiment was shared by many students and parents.
President Trump will meet with the families of victims of the Santa Fe shooting on a visit to Texas today. The president will also attend campaign fundraisers in Houston and Dallas. Former movie mogul Harvey Weinstein has been indicted on rape and criminal sex act charges in New York City. He's denied all allegations of non-consensual sex. Weinstein's lawyer says political pressure made an indictment unavoidable. Forecasters say isolated heavy rainstorms could still instantly cause flooding in areas of the North Carolina mountains that have had 20 inches of rain in the past 15 days. Two people died in a home collapse in Boone, and thousands were forced out of their homes for hours while engineers checked the structural integrity of the Tahoma Dam near Marion after a landslide caused by heavy Alberto rains. The White House says it doesn't support comedian Roseanne Barr's racist tweet, nor was President Trump when he tweeted an executive behind ABC's cancellation of sitcom Roseanne was biased. Press Secretary Sarah Sanders says Trump was calling out a media double standard.
Where was Bob Iger's apology to the White House staff for Jemele Hill calling the president and anyone associated with him a white supremacist? To Christians around the world for Joy Behr calling Christianity a mental illness?
Barr herself was back on Twitter yesterday blaming her ill-considered tweet on a sleep medication and the cancellation of her show on a threatened advertiser boycott.
Thank you, Rasa. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. The Super Bowl victory by the Philadelphia Eagles last winter is still paying dividends for fans, even those at the altar. As you know, many people did not think the Eagles would win Super Bowl 52 against the mighty New England Patriots. Jennifer Sullivan was one of those people who did not think a Philly victory was possible, and she was willing to bet on it. The payoff being that her fiancé, Patrick Hanks, could wear an Eagles football jersey at their wedding. The Eagles, of course, took down the Patriots 41-33, delivering the franchise its first ever Lombardi Trophy. Patrick Hanks happily fulfilled his obligation Saturday at Bear Creek Mountain Resort with prompting from the officiant.
Jen, like many others, never thought that the Eagles would actually win. Yet, here we are.
Moments before saying I do, Mr. Hanks removed his suit jacket and pulled a Carson Wentz jersey out. The Hankses say they invited Wentz to their wedding, but he couldn't make it. Wedding guests, of course, joined in on the fun, bursting into a celebratory Eagles chant. For Rasa Kay, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Great news! There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.